Hello and welcome to Forces Sport with me, Kath Brazier, and Julian Evans, reunited again after another bank holiday. But Jules has been busy. Coming up, he's been speaking to our guest this week, Chloe Pike. She's the UK Armed Forces and Army Ladies Tennis number one. Injury threatened to bring a premature halt to her days playing and competing, but the coronavirus pandemic meant she was able to go under the surgeon's knife to undergo surgery to resolve a serious shoulder injury.
I think it is just probably just over worrying, but I think just because for a while we didn't really know what was wrong with it, so I think once you actually know this is what I've done to it and this is what I need to do for it to get fixed, it's sort of a relief in a way. So even though I did have to have surgery, it was almost a relief to find out what was wrong and then you know the steps you have to take to get it better.
Now, that successful surgery meant that Chloe was able to make her Wimbledon debut last summer in the Inter-Services Championships, where she helped the Army to success.
It's certainly nice to come off and say you've won a match at Wimbledon. Doesn't matter that it's not the Championships, we don't have to tell people that part. But yeah, it's a really special experience. Not a lot of people get to say that they've played on the sort of hallowed turf of Wimbledon.
We talk about that a lot, don't we, Jules? The hallowed turf of Twickenham, the hallowed turf of Lords, and also the hallowed turf of Wimbledon. And for a couple of years, they didn't play at Wimbledon, did they, Inter-Services? So they sort of missed out. But it's nice to see it back at SW19.
Yeah, fantastic. As you say, they couldn't play there for a couple of seasons because of some work that was being done at Wimbledon. I just want to point out that chat I had with Chloe wasn't done at our local swimming baths because of the echo. It was done in an indoor tennis centre. That's why there's a bit of an echo.
That's fine. I just, Wimbledon, so I'm only about 25 minutes walk from Wimbledon, the championships, the grounds.
Ooh.
And I know, and it's become one of my lockdown walks. I know we're not in lockdown anymore, but I still regularly walk that maybe once a week. And for me, it's so magical, just walking past the gates. And at the moment, of course, they're ramping up because the championships are in June. So there's extra bits being built. They do a bridge over the road and stuff like that. And still magic.
Yeah, do you get a sporting tingle?
I do.
I get a sporting tingle. even if I'm going past Kempton Park Racecourse, there's nothing happening there apart from a market, I still get a tingle from the sense of sporting atmosphere and excitement that can go on in there. Football stadiums are the same. When we've been to the Inter-Services T20 cricket at Lords, there's not much happening, but I still get that tingle.
Did you get the tingle Army Navy? Of course, I missed that whole hullabaloo.
Did get the tingle. Yeah. Where have you been? I did get the tingle. I did. I always get a tingle at a stadium. I don't know what it is.
Well, we're going to give you, Jules and I are having a visit to Lords in a couple of weeks, aren't we? So you'll get that tingle. We'll talk about that more then.
Month and a bit. We can share the
is
tingle.
Is that a month and a bit? Gosh. No, it's only a month away, mate. You need to get your dates right. June the 4th. We're less than a month away.
Oh, yes, I'd forgotten about that one.
Okay, still owes me money. That's why he convened me money. Anyway, now there's been some great Forces sporting achievements this week across the spectrum. First up, late Saturday night, I don't know about you, Jules, but I managed to tune into the Professional Triathlete Organization's feed of the Ironman World Championships in the US. And there she was, Army physio Captain Kat Matthews, coming second in the Ironman World Championships in St. George in Utah. She completed the course in 8 hours, 43 minutes and 49 seconds, just under 9 minutes behind the winner, Switzerland's Daniela Reif, and 3 minutes ahead of third place athlete Anne Haug of Germany. Now, she's been speaking about her historic achievement.
I think I dreamed of podiuming here. I let myself believe I could win on the right day. But to actually pull it off is a whole nother feat, and I'm still so baffled as to how my body and brain was able to do it, to be honest. But yeah, I'm really, really happy. Knowing how many people participate in this sport is really opens your eyes to the achievement, I guess. You know, it's a grassroots sport where people are finishing in 17 hours. Anyone can enter, anyone can give it a go, you know, at the same competition. And so it's just fantastic to race against not just obviously the best in the world professionally, but against all of the amateurs as well. And to come from, you know, starting my first triathlon with the ATA, you know, rocking up to Aldershot to do some training weekends and going to Cotswold to do the standard distance events. And it's been a thoroughly crazy journey, but it's cool to I guess to put my money where my mouth is in a way and say, yeah, I think I did think I could do this one day, but I think I thought it would come in about 5 years' time, not on my first world champs. So Anne was the world reigning Ironman champion from 2019 in Hawaii. And so, yes, I beat her at Lanzarote, but the Ironman is really her passion. And so to beat her on the world stage at the full distance was incredible. I only really did it in the last 5K, I think, or 10K. I pride myself on not fading in the marathon, and that's something that sort of pride really got me through the last 20K of the run. I sort of was like, no, I can't let my data drop off, whereas I knew that Anne and Daniela would probably fade. Daniela had the race of her life, even though that's her fifth Ironman World Champs, I think. I mean, I think it's the race of her life. The performance was outstanding. You know, in comparison to the male field as well, not just the fact she won. And so to come second to her on her one of her best days ever is a privilege. I don't see that as a negative at all.
Very tired, Kat Matthews. I don't think she got much sleep, just because she was still sort of letting it sink in that she'd come second, Jules.
I would go as far to say that this is the greatest sporting achievement of any of our military athletes ever, certainly for the women.
Yeah.
I know we've had Olympians, but to finish
second
in
the world.
In your debut Ironman Championships, you know, the time that it took, 8 hours, 43 minutes and 49 seconds, I went to film some football on Saturday. It was a team from Glasgow. So they had flown from Glasgow all the way down, played a game of football, had a few beers afterwards, celebrated and flown back before Kat had even finished, got across the finishing line. I can't get my head around that.
So no, the fact that she talked about it then. I mean, she, when we had her on the podcast, which was very early on, I think in our second week, she talked about the fact that she's a bit of a data geek. So she's so sort of precise about her timings, and she knew on the run that she had to, the fact that she sped up. I mean, after all that time, I can't even speed up when I've been out running for 20 minutes.
No, that's the clue. That was the clue to the person that she is, that data. She has a very analytical mind. I wonder if that's why she sort of is part of that, because her background is physiotherapy, part of that medicine background. I wonder if that's all part of it. But she's a great competitor on the track as well as off it. She likes to share. She's very much a sharing person, so she will share information with the other athletes, whereas some athletes are quite closed off. So
yeah.
I think it's a tremendous performance. Tremendous performance.
Beyond it. I mean, you know, we all knew it was happening. Of course, we all knew it wasn't in Hawaii this year for various reasons and all have you. But obviously, St. George, she does like that track in St. George, because you'd already competed there for...
She does. And a lot of people had said that the whilst you perhaps lose a little bit of that spiritual element to it not being in Hawaii, say spiritual, the fact that that's the home of Ironman, but so many of the athletes enjoy that course and say it's actually more testing than the one in Hawaii. So that's quite interesting as well.
Well, look, whilst we're on triathlon sort of athletics, there's been success elsewhere. Luke Pollard, who normally guides for Dave Ellis, who's a visually impaired triathlete, he actually was running on his own at the 70.3 in Mallorca, I think it was, also an Ironman, but obviously a shorter distance. And he came ninth. Danny Hodgkinson was the first to cross the line, the Sunderland 5K. And your man, Arnie Rogers, out there in Gibraltar, winning the half marathon. And of course, he'll be qualifying for Commonwealth Games later this year.
Yeah, two of the three were enjoying the Mediterranean sun. And poor old Danny's up in Sunderland.
I'm sure she didn't mind if she came first.
That's home turf for her. Home turf, that part of the world.
Just moving on, Jules, really good sign, talking about, you know, our forces sportswomen as well. Carrie Roberts, winning Challenge Cup final with St Helens, came from behind against Leeds Rhinos, which was good. Good to see Quinns and England star Amy Cocaine back on the rugby union field as well. Was it a hat-trick she scored of tries?
Hat-trick of tries to help Harlequins beat Bristol to secure their place in the playoffs. And, of course, dear old Sarah Bonner was in that as
well. Yes, of course.
Scotland and RAF player Sarah Bonner was part of the Quinns team there.
And of course, you went to the Army Reserves final this weekend, but we showed the Army Cup final, which was won by 4 Regiment RLC. We played that live last week. They beat one Mercians 3-2 at Aldershot. 4 Regiment led twice, but twice the Mercians levelled before a third goal came with just 3 minutes left. After the game, John Knighton spoke to the man who scored all of those three goals, Private Terence Cuffey.
Oh, it was hard work today. And obviously, all the boys grafted today. And then also they helped me to make me get the hat-trick today as well. So I'm happy that I scored and then we won the title.
You have to be there at the right moment to put those balls away. So many opportunities came your way. And you were there at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, oh, pokers, that's what the shakers say.
No, but I mean, a great team performance today. You know, to go ahead 3 times in a final, I mean, it must have been gutting when they got their equaliser, you know, with literally a few minutes to go to bring it back to 2-2. Did you think, oh no, extra time?
Oh, well, to be honest, Ray, the team that we get, so I don't believe that we will ever go extra time, because it's like we got the quality and then we need to like keep our heads up and then carry on the good playing football. But I'm happy that I got those 3 opportunities and then we won the game.
Now, the Army.
I also thought he was calling John Ray, but he was saying Wright, wasn't he? It's just the accent.
I think Ray suits John. It gives him more of a sporting edge. Ray Knighton.
Ray Knighton in his big fluffy coat. Now, in the Army Reserves final, Glasgow-based 6 Scots beat 4 Lancs 3-1. Jules, you were there. Danny McInnes was on target twice. Ryan Campbell also netted for his side. Afterwards, the 6 Scots head coach, Sergeant Kenny Kyle, admitted this year's Cup campaign had involved an awful lot of commitment from his side.
Third time lucky. We've been there. Knocking at the door. I've been the bridesmaid a couple of times against a good 4 Lancs team a couple of years ago. It was nice to finally get over the line this year.
What does this mean to the unit, especially off the back of a pandemic, to come here and lift some silverware?
I'm going to get soaked here.
off the back of a splashing pandemic, what does it mean to you?
Obviously the guys getting back together, playing football, getting out there, doing what they do best. You know, great bunch of lads. A lot of them, this is their first year playing for us. A couple of them have been round the mill a few times, so it's nice to come out here and finally get it over the line.
Now, 2022 is a big year for military sports women. Following on from the Army versus Navy women's teams taking to the turf at Twickenham for the first ever all-female inter-services clash at the home of English rugby, a UK Armed Forces women's side is set to play on the main pitch at Lord's this summer, as Jules said, in probably about 6 weeks' time, June 16th. The Army Cricket Association recently staged a training camp and inter-corps competition to encourage more female soldiers to give the sport a try. The longer-term aim is to boost Army representation and participation at inter-services level. Jules spoke to Army Women's team manager Major Mel Vaggers about the fixture and told him why parity for her players has been needed for some time.
It's great. I think it's well overdue that women get to play where the men have been playing for many years. So the fact that the women are playing at Twickenham and we're getting to play at Lord's in June, I think it's great. And hopefully we'll encourage more women to get involved in the sport and showcase it.
Yeah, you must be really excited. So a UCAF side, so picking the best from all 3 services, and that brings with it its own excitement as well, I imagine.
Yeah, it's always a privilege to play for your single service, but it's even more of a privilege to get selected to play for the UCAF teams.
And it's good, Jules, that it's a UCAF side. They'll be playing an MCC women's team on the 16th of June, like you said, on the main pitch. Good, because really, at the moment, would you say in the Forces, women's cricket, it's still sort of a bit behind them. The Army have always had a really, really strong side. The Navy have had their moments as well. The RAF seem to have a sort of new team every year. So it's right that they have a UCAF team really to showcase at the home of cricket.
I think so. As you say, the Army have dominated recently. So you want to have a competitive side, but it's brilliant that at long last, a women's military side will be able to play at the home of cricket. So really looking forward to that. I wonder who the MCC will feature, because in the past they have sort of drizzled in. What do I mean?
Both, I think.
Included, a few of the stars of women's cricket. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, internationals is what I mean. Fingers crossed we have a fine day of weather on the 16th, because that's also the concluding day of the Men's Inter-Services T20 Championships as well.
Oh, perfect. Excellent. Well, as we're talking about our successful sportswomen this programme, we're doing a lot of that at the moment, but let's go on to your interview from this week, Jules. And you've been speaking to tennis player Chloe Pike on a career-threatening injury, the COVID pandemic, and what it's like to play at Wimbledon.
As you can imagine, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty special. Like you say, we, as military, we do the stewarding for Wimbledon, which is a great opportunity for people who sort of volunteer to do that. And then in turn, I suppose our reward is we get to play on the courts at Wimbledon. So when I first joined, unfortunately, we were not playing at Wimbledon just because they were having some work done for their courts there, which is understandable. But then last year, we returned to Wimbledon. So that was the first time I got to play there myself. And so we played on the Orangi courts, which is the courts players used to practice on at Wimbledon. But even then, as practice courts, they're like perfect. It was really, really great experience. So it was amazing just to say, played at Wimbledon.
Well, it is an amazing experience. And going into that tournament, you hadn't had an opportunity to play too much tennis like the rest because of the pandemic. But for you yourself, you'd be coming off the back of an injury. What was the injury that you'd done to yourself?
That's right. Yeah. So probably 3 years ago now, I started to notice a bit of a niggle in my shoulder, and probably typical sort of sports person thought, oh, it'll go away, it'll be fine. But then unfortunately ended up sort of having an injury for a couple of years, trying to work out what it was, going through various different physio. In the end, went off to a surgeon and found out I had a posterior labral tear in my shoulder. So luckily, he did a great job, fixed that up for me, which meant that last year I got to play again here in the Army Champs. I was lucky enough to win that, which was really good. So I was very happy to be able to come back, because at one point I was worried, oh no, what if I won't be able to ever play tennis again? So yeah, it was great to be able to play.
You actually had those fears that, you know, your tennis days might be over?
Yeah, I think it was just probably just over worrying. But I think just because for a while we didn't really know what was wrong with it. So I think once you actually know this is what I've done to it and this is what I need to do for it to get fixed, it's sort of a relief in a way. So even though I did have to have surgery, it was almost a relief to find out what was wrong, and then you know the steps you have to take to get it better. But yeah, certainly there were times when I was thinking, oh no, this is it now, I won't be able to play. So that would have been a huge disappointment. So yeah, I was really happy to get back on court.
Well, we've seen on the international scene how much an injury can set players back. You know, Andy Murray with all the various things that he's had done to his hip. So you with your shoulder, I mean, a shoulder is an integral part with tennis. So you know, talk us through the other side. You know, what sort of things did you have to do to rehab yourself away from that injury?
Yeah, so I suppose I was quite lucky as well, being in the army. It gave me the chance to go on sort of a 3-week rehab course that they do to try and rehabilitate soldiers that are injured and things like that, even if it is through sport or by whatever means. So you're kind of lucky enough to go on that. You're protected from doing work. You're there solely just to help your injury and recover. So you've got your own sort of group with a physio and a rehabilitation instructor, and they give you all sorts of exercises and a program to work through, which includes all sorts of things from stretching, mobility, sort of gym exercises, and then even doing things in the swimming pool. So it kind of covers all bases, really. It's a really great thing, I suppose, that you can get through the army. So I was really grateful for that. That was definitely a big help as well.
Were you a little bit apprehensive when you were able to put ball to racket?
Yes, I was a little bit worried that I would have forgotten everything I'd ever done. But I think luckily, once you start hitting a few balls, it kind of comes back to you. Definitely just takes a bit of work and definitely requires a lot of patience. But in a way, I think because I was so happy and almost grateful just to be back on the court, I sort of was able to let go of any sort of expectations of standard and things like that. So I was happy just to be playing, especially with that aim of Wimbledon in mind. So yeah, that was really good.
You joined the army with a little bit of background in tennis. You'd played some high level stuff. So you know, were you surprised when you saw the standard of tennis that's played at inter-services level?
Yeah, so I was lucky enough to go off to the States and play tennis at uni there for 4 years with a tennis scholarship, which is really great. And similarly to army tennis, they kind of, even though tennis is an individual sport, it's somewhere they turn it into a team sport. So yes, you still play your matches as an individual, but at the end of the day, you're playing for the team. And that's the same with what we do with the army. So you might have 4 players playing singles individually, but your results all matter for the end team result. So And you of course play doubles together as well, so those things kind of cross over quite well. And yeah, the standards are really great, considering obviously we're not professional tennis players by any means. But it's great that everyone's able to come and do these events and get sort of time away from work to do that and have that sort of team experience as well.
Yeah, 4 years in the States. You haven't picked up an American accent.
I haven't, no. I think my first year back from there, my friends used to poke fun at me a bit because they said I had a bit of a twang. But I think I've lost that now, so I'm safe there.
And was there an opportunity for you when you were there to play against some of those players that have gone on and perhaps graced some of the bigger competitions and tournaments?
Yeah, so I can't think of any sort of big names that everyone would know, but we certainly got to go and play at some really great places. So we won our sort of conference championships, which they have out there. So because of that, we went into the overall national pool. So we got to go out to California and play at Berkeley, which was really, really great. So we got to travel from New York, where we were based, over to California. And it was great just to see those teams. And we got to play quite a few of the Ivy League teams as well, because of where we were based on the East Coast, we were near quite a few of those. So we went to Harvard and Brown and I can't even remember where else now. But yeah, we got to play some really big sort of university names.
I don't want to say it's a well-trodden path, but it is something that somebody else from the Army tennis setup has done. Scott C, his brother-in-law, yeah, of course, to Andy,
yeah,
Murray.
Right,
but
yeah.
I mean, he and Preet Chandy have both gone on to do sort of exploits in the South Pole. Are you tempted to do something similar?
I think I'll be keeping my feet in slightly warmer territory for now. But yeah, what they've done is really, really great. And I know a lot of kids in schools and things have been quite inspired by that. I know when Pola Preet, as she's known, is off doing her sort of school tour now. And I know that lots of kids have said they wanted to do something similar to that. So, I mean, again, it's great that she's been able to go off and do that. But hopefully we'll be able to get her back into tennis as well at some point.
Well, look, you know, 4 years in America, is that where you hatched a plan to think, do you know what, I might join the military?
So to be completely honest, it wasn't on my radar at all. I'd never considered it. I didn't know anything really at all about the military. I didn't know about all the various different roles that you can do and things like that. It was when I came back from the States and I was having a chat to someone that I know just from outside that's sort of probably, I guess, a bit of a mentor. And he sort of suggested, you know, well, you like sport, you like kind of doing all these different things, you like travelling, why have you thought about the military? And it was only when he pointed it out that I thought, oh, right, okay, I'll have a look into it. And then, of course, the fact that you can do things like sport, you know, go to play at Wimbledon and get paid for it, luckily. I mean, yeah, it seemed like a bit of a no-brainer to me. So, yeah, it's definitely something that I hadn't thought of before. But once it was suggested to me, it became a bit of an obvious choice.
And for you, you don't just play here or for the Army, you also represent county tennis as well. So, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I suppose since I was a junior, I've played for my county, which is Avon. And then every summer we have a county week where we, again, go off as a team. And again, it's played on the grass, which is great because it can be difficult now to find places to play on grass. So that's a luxury as well. And it's all doubles, three doubles matches a day for a week. And it's just a really, really good event where everyone can get together again and just play lots of tennis. It's can sometimes be a bit of a grueling week playing lots of matches, but it certainly gets you sort of into the zone, especially playing on grass. So yeah, it's really, really good.
Do you feel as if you're part of a military tennis community, all three services all sort of helping each other out? It's very welcoming, isn't it, the setup?
Oh yeah, definitely. So we've got our UK Armed Forces tennis team as well. So essentially it's kind of taking the top players from each of the services and then we'll go off and play matches against maybe universities or different clubs, which is a really nice thing to do as well. Even though we do play and compete against each other at the inter-services, we're on top of that again. It's another sort of layer to it where we've got that other team on top of it as well.
Last year you made your debut at SW19, but so just tell us, what is it like to win there? It's one thing to take to the court, but something else to pick up some silverware.
Yeah, it's certainly nice to come off and say you've won a match at Wimbledon. Doesn't matter that it's not the championship, so we don't have to tell people that part. But yeah, it's a really special experience. Not a lot of people get to say that they've played on the sort of hallowed turf of Wimbledon. So
we've been spoilt the last few years with British tennis. We've had, you know, men's champions and women's champions as well. So do you think the sport has turned a corner in Britain? Because for ages we waited for those British champions and then they all came along at once almost.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope so. We've been lucky, obviously. We've had Emma Raducanu's success recently as well, which is really great. And I'm sure there'll be lots of young girls that'll be inspired by that. Well, and boys as well, whoever it is. So yeah, we're lucky to have that. And she's obviously still really young, so she's got years ahead of her, hopefully. And obviously Andy Murray's legacy, he's obviously still playing now, but even whenever he stops, he's still obviously made a big difference to tennis in the UK. So yeah, I think hopefully it's looking positive for us.
There is a new name on the lips in tennis though, Jules, and that's 19-year-old Carlos Alcaraz, who beat Novak Djokovic and Rafa Nadal. Well, he won the Madrid Open because he went on to beat Zverev, but I think it was the first time someone had beaten Rafa Nadal and Djokovic on clay in sort of consecutive matches ever. So 19 years old, so he's the new name I think we'll be watching. Unfortunately, not British, but there we go.
We'll see what the summer season brings when they have to play. I didn't want to say to Chloe it's grass and not grass. I didn't want to say it to
we have a lot of listeners who will say it's grass, so come on.
Well, I think now's a chance to educate you. If you say grass, it's actually grass. Anyway, moving swiftly on.
He's so sorry. Yes, moving swiftly on. Just wanted to mention, just we haven't got a lot of time, but just in the sort of football world, really amazing news for one of our soon-to-be ex-Forces footballers, Nick De Long, who, of course, was UK Armed Forces manager for a good 4 years. He's due to leave the RAF very soon, but he's gone on to join the academy set up at the Memorial Ground of Bristol Rovers. And of course, Bristol Rovers made the news this weekend because they won 7-0 over Scunthorpe to get promotion to League One. Joey Barton, of course, managed side, the Pirates. They had to win by 5 goals more than Northampton, who were at Barrow. And I mean, I think the word is scenes, Jules. Scenes at the Memorial Ground.
Good day out. Everybody that was there seemed to be on the pitch at the end, so... Well done, Bristol Rovers. Well done
Bristol
to them.
Bristol Rovers. Yeah, and amazing. I mean, one, obviously the Premier League title still to be decided, and obviously the Scottish title still to be decided as well, because Rangers had a win and held off Celtic for another week. But Chelsea in the Women's Super League won their third successive title after a thrilling 4-2 win over Manchester United. I watched the first half of the Arsenal-West Ham game when there were no goals and it was looking like it could be an Arsenal win. And of course, Man United were 2-1 up, and then tuned into the second half to see two incredible goals from Sam Kerr. And Chelsea, that's their sixth Super League title. So they are very dominant.
Emma Hayes working her magic
amazing
there, isn't she?
Yeah, she said this is the sweetest because of the problems they've been with the COVID pandemic and, of course, the problems they've had at Chelsea this year. So, and of course, elsewhere, first ever Miami Grand Prix, we should just mark it. Nothing remarkable other than the fact that it was in Miami. Looked incredible, you know, sort of rivaling Monaco for a little bit of glitz and glamour, wasn't it? Everyone was there.
And a busy week ahead for us. What's coming
up
for you?
Yes, it is. Well, we've got the RAF Football Cup final coming up this Thursday. That's at 1:30. And we're live streaming that on the Forces News Facebook site. And there's also the Army Boxing Final, which will see three para versus one RRF, the Royal Regiment of Fusiliers. And that's also going to be a live stream on Thursday evening. So plenty for us to get our teeth into.
And is it Ray Knighton doing the boxing?
Ray Knighton, yes, in his fluffy coat. He'll be there. So I am, many apologies, I will be doing the commentary for the RAF Cup final. But please do tune in. As I say, lots happening. So if you just stay live on the Forces News
if you're doing the commentary, a chance for you to see some pokers.
Yes, I'll definitely, should I get pokers in? I'll definitely get pokers in.
Get your pokers.
Listen, I'm aware that the interview that John did with Cat Matthews yesterday is available on forces.net and will be available across our sort of the airwaves over the next few days, because hopefully our colleagues in radio will be using that and playing it out, because like I said, second is incredible. So plenty of ways to revisit and see all of our news stories at bfbs.com/podcasts on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to re-listen to this show, or if you want to hear Cat's interview way back in September September last year when she was talking about the World Championships, which she'd just come second in. And if you want to hear more from our amazing range of military athletes, then you can have a look back at all the chats with our guests on the BFBS Sports Show YouTube channel. And as I said, go to forces.net for the latest results and action. And of course, our Forces News Facebook page, where you can see the live stream from this week, but also look back at ones from, you know, maybe the Army Navy you want to relive. But that is it from Forces Sport for another week. Do have a think whilst we're away of anyone you know who's got an interesting story that you think deserves a Forces Sport spotlight. Do let us know. You can email us at forcessport@bfbs.com. We'll be back next week. Thank you, Jules. Thank you for listening. We'll see you soon.